Welcome to the course on critical theory, cultural studies, and postmodern theory, considered in terms of civil liberty. This is lecture 12, the final lecture of the series, and in this lecture I will discuss some of the critical conclusions that I have drawn about critical theory, cultural studies, and postmodern theory. In particular, I will discuss them in terms of civil liberty. The extreme epistemological skepticism and subjectivism and anti-realism and anti-science aspects of postmodernism have been treated ad nauseum by others. Instead, this lecture will consist of a critical evaluation of the schools of thought in terms of civil liberty in particular. I have already alluded to some of the problems posed for civil liberty by the Frankfurt School, in particular with reference to Herbert Marcuse's essay, Repressive Tolerance. As we saw, that Repressive Tolerance essay is quite repressive with reference to any speech other than that deemed acceptable by leftists. But further evaluations can be made regarding the Frankfurt School, cultural studies, and postmodern theory in terms of civil liberty. And here we'll begin discussing some of them. In fact, I've tried to make a pretty exhaustive discussion of what I feel to be the problems. The first involves the emphasis placed on the systemic under Marxism and no less under neo-Marxism. This idea that everything is systemic and the system must be understood first and the whole makes up the parts and all that. Under Marxism and no less under neo-Marxism, the welfare of the system is placed above that of the individual. As such, individual liberty is always sacrificed. This was seen in the Soviet Union, as the authors of the Black Book of Communism make quite clear. Quote, "By reifying these class categories as though they had long existed and were utterly immutable, Marxism-Leninism deified the system itself, so that categories and abstractions were far more important than any human reality. Individuals and groups were seen as the archetypes of some sort of primary disembodied sociology. This made crime much easier. The informer, the torturer, and the NKVD executioner did not denounce, cause suffering, or kill people. They merely eliminated some sort of abstraction that was not beneficial to the common good." That is, we see that the abstractions are primary and the individual is secondary, and as such, the individual is sacrificed to abstractions. The emphasis on systemic determinism or change and the attendant threat it poses to individual liberty is no less true for the neo-Marxists of the Frankfurt School and Cultural Studies than it is for Marxism, Orthodox Marxism per se. The importance placed on the totality of social relations places human rights and individual liberty in a subordinate position. As we've seen, the Frankfurt School puts this notion of totality forth, and examination of the totality is the most important element aspect of their work. This puts the individual liberty in a subordinate position. Individuals become mere political emblems of this or that systemic condition or problem. As we see with Antifa and Black Lives Matter, this exonerates activists, in their own minds at least, in their attacks on individuals. Individuals don't matter, it's what they represent that matters. The same phenomenon was in evidence for the 60s and 70s radicals, who treated individuals as mere political emblems, oftentimes with violent consequences for these individuals. Whether the issue is class justice, racial justice, gender justice, or environmental justice, the same logic applies. Individuals can be sacrificed for these systemic level considerations. When we get to the postmodern theorists, the totality drops out of the picture. because there are these multiplicities of discourse and the totality can't be grasped and so on and so forth. But so too does the notion of the self-determining individual. I think we've pointed this out, but let's go into it further. The individual under postmodern theory becomes nothing but a node in communication circuits or a social construct of various discourses. As Lyotard wrote and repeated several times, and each of us knows that our self does not amount to much. A self does not amount to much. What happens to individual liberty when a self does not amount to much? The very idea of individual liberty becomes meaningless, even impossible. We'll go further into this. When one becomes a mere effect of discourse or language, one's self-determination is diminished or theorized out of existence. When one is merely a node or a social construct, one becomes nothing but an effect of the system or of the discourse in this case. The self is seen as nothing but an effect rather than a cause. Now, this is merely philosophical, but it leads to a particular acceptance about the notion of the self and likewise has an impact for the belief in individual liberty and therefore a demotion of it in the philosophical realm and then in the political. Not only does this conception come with the abrogation of individual liberty, it also exonerates one of any responsibility. Individuals are nothing but the products of discourses. How can they be held responsible for anything? Sorry, but I was linguistically and socially constructed to do such and such, becomes the implicit refrain. However, this only serves as an excuse for those deemed oppressed or subordinated, and not for the dominant who are seen as culpable. Such moral relativism is clearly self-contradictory, as is the cultural relativism of postmodernism. All cultures are equal and equally deserving of respect, but Western culture is particularly reprehensible and evil. This contradiction, coupled with a belief that social relations amount to nothing but power plays, results in disastrous consequences, as we see them being played out today. Individuals are no longer regarded as having rights on their own accord. Their rights are either granted or denied on the basis of their social status. The individual becomes nothing but an emblem of a social status, of a place in the social order, of a class or a race, etc., etc. Some libertarians, now we're going to move into the question of the so-called freedom that comes with the anything goes epistemological and skepticism and epistemic humility that comes with postmodernism, with its rejection of meta narratives as a liberatory or as an invocation of freedom. Some libertarians have held this position, and I've argued against it, but I'm going to argue further here. Postmodernism is great, they say. It frees us from such meta-narratives as, quote, the state is necessary for civil liberty, etc. But this is a mistake. As I argued in Springtime for Snowflakes, Social Justice and its Postmodern Parentage, once beliefs are unconstrained by the object world and people can believe anything they like with impunity, the possibility for assuming a pretense of infallibility becomes almost irresistible, especially when the requisite power is available to support such philosophical idealism. In fact, given its willy-nilly determination of truth and reality on the basis of beliefs alone, philosophical and social idealism necessarily becomes dogmatic, authoritarian, anti-rational, and effectively religious. So what do I mean by this? What I mean is that when coupled with the premium that Foucault, Lyotard, and others place on power, that everything is power relations, the lack of objective constraints, the lack of belief in truth or any criteria for the judgment of facts, leads inexorably to the arbitrary imposition of beliefs, to authoritarianism. So, whenever you can assert any kind of belief without regard to any objective criteria, any criteria that can be verified or falsified by others, then you are led to a place where you can impose your belief because there's no pushback from the world suggesting that that belief is wrong, or that pushback is discounted because you believe that belief itself is sufficient. Belief without any objective correlatives. When my truth becomes as good or better than any objective truth, or any attempts to approach objective truth, when lived experience trumps facts, then one can impose one's truth claims over others with apparent impunity. There is nothing to push back against belief. And then when power is present, this becomes problematic, because there's no court of appeal. Thus we see assertions such as truth and facts are very different things. This statement drives me crazy. Rather than understanding that aggregate facts make up truth, lived experience becomes a justification in itself. My truth becomes as good or better than anything approaching objective truth. We see this playing out in the Antifa Black Lives Matter movement, which, as I've noted, is a direct descendant of critical theory. Despite statistics which show that blacks, when factors such as being armed and dangerous are taken into consideration, are no more targeted than others for police violence, lived experience which trumps facts carries the day in any case. With such logic in play, there is no reasoning with people. Violence against others, including abrogating property rights and their right to live, becomes quote-unquote justified in their minds. In his Explaining Postmodernism, Stephen Hicks explains the seeming contradiction between the authoritarianism and extreme epistemological skepticism / relativism of postmodernists by suggesting that the skepticism / relativism is a mere cover for the authoritarianism. And there is some truth in this, definitely. As Hicks sees it, the subjectivism, skepticism, and relativism are mere ruses to cover for the authoritarianism. They provide epistemological cover for authoritarianism. Further, the subjectivism, skepticism, and relativism allows postmodernists to deny the evidence of socialism's failure while maintaining the socialism's ethos and goals. Quote, postmodernism is the academic far left's epistemological strategy for responding to the crisis caused by the failures of socialism in theory and in practice. Very good point. This does explain postmodernism's epistemology and its authoritarian politics, but it doesn't take into consideration its postmodernism's break from Marxism at face value. It doesn't take postmodernist break from Marxism at face value. It just says that they're basically lying. And it doesn't explain the connection between the authoritarianism and the philosophical skepticism / relativism, except as an incidental relationship. I don't think this is incidental at all, as I've tried to make clear. My explanation, as I have stated, is that the epistemological skepticism and relativism allows for authoritarianism intrinsically. Then there's the collectivism of both the neo-Marxists and the post-Marxists. This is related to, but not identical with, the emphasis on the systemic. The collectivism means putting the collective before and above the individual. For both neo-Marxists and post-Marxists, the collective is all-determining and all-important. whether the subject has any agency, as in neo-Marxism, or not, as in post-Marxism, the collective is primary and most important. When the collective is seen as primary, the individual, including individual liberty and self-determination, is either secondary or non-existent. We've seen how this plays out in collectivist regimes. It's very clear in history. Individuals are sacrificed to notions of the common good or the proletarian state, whether these phrases are explicitly used or not. You'll see some Marxists say, we never say common good, but this is what's meant, where the proletarian state or other collectivist ideals are forwarded as the most important desideratum at hand. This lack of importance placed on the individual is no less true for postmodernism, despite its denial of the totality or meta-narratives. Postmodernism nevertheless takes the primacy of collectivism as a given. The collective always comes before the individual in postmodern theory. Whether this collectivism is an inheritance from Marxism or from Rousseau, as some claim, is really of no consequence here. This is a philosophical distinction without a difference where this issue is concerned. In the case of both the neo-Marxists and the post-Marxists, there is also a problem of fatalism where the individual is concerned. This is a philosophical fatalism which has implications for everything, politics, etc., rights. This fatalism follows from the anti-individualism of both the neo-Marxists and the post-Marxists. If the totality is all-determining, or if there is no totality, but the individual is determined by local discourses, social determinism no less leads to fatalism for the individual. Fatalism works by encouraging the abdication of individual self-determination in advance. It precludes self-determining action, at least philosophically. This leads to an attitudinal position, which disables people effectively. Thus, social determinism leading to fatalism is a self-fulfilling prophecy. I can't do this because of my class position, or I can't do this because of the discourses or intersecting me in powerful ways that I can't overcome, and so on and so forth. Again, whether the totality or local discourses are all determining is of little consequence, really. It still leads to fatalism. Yet both lead to fatalism where individual self-determination is concerned. Where neo-Marxism in particular is concerned, the belief that one's class position is determined and inescapable leads to a fatalistic acceptance of that so-called class position. I can't do this because I'm a working class subject and that's impossible for a working class person, etc. But we know that these classes are post hoc constructions and they're imposed by this line of thinking. They don't exist as such. There is no such caste system under free market capitalism, as Mises had made clear. This becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, a theoretical stranglehold on the individual. I've succumbed to that myself when I was a leftist. I believed these things, and therefore I abdicated my own agency in advance, which seems to be really quite beneficial to monopolists or would-be monopolists. It eliminates competition. Where postmodernism is at play, the notion that all social relations are explicable in terms of power is also a debilitating one where individual self-determination is concerned. If one approaches every encounter in terms of a power differential, one is bereft in advance of one's efficacy to enter into contracts as a free agent. Encounters become nothing but a series of power struggles. When all social relations are seen as power struggles, it turns all contractual relations into forced relations rather than negotiated voluntary relations. Every encounter is made out to be agonistic, that is, battled, a struggle, a will, a struggle for power rather than voluntary. Free market exchanges are made out to be a matter of beating others or being beaten by them, of winning or losing, a zero-sum game, in effect, whereas the possibility of mutual benefit is precluded, and a priori hostility is the adopted attitude for all encounters. And we see this in the postmodernist embattlement and their constant claims that everything is a power struggle of the disempowered against the powerful, and so on and so forth. Since most individual actors will be prone to adopt a sense of being overpowered or outpowered by others, a skepticism and a premeditated belief that one will be cheated colors almost all encounters. Defeatism is the logical conclusion of both Marxism and post-Marxism. The denial of individual agency through collectivism, fatalism, and defeatism is a characteristic of all leftist positions, and it is a sure sign that you're dealing with some form of leftism or other. When you see a denial of agency through collectivism, fatalism, defeatism, this is leftism, you can be sure. Or some sort of personal problem, but usually it's an ideological construction. That Marxism and postmodernism share this underlying ethos shows that the two are philosophical kin, as I've said. They are related philosophically in terms of their ethos. This concludes the course on critical theory, cultural studies, and postmodern theory. I welcome a discussion of this course and any and all topics treated herein in the live conversation planned by LibertyClassroom.com. Thank you.